Welcome to Embracing His Glory. It's a special Tuesday feature of the God Journey where I'm just sharing with you some of the things that have been the most transformative on my journey. It's stuff I've learned over the last 25 years, but this language I've only put to it in the last 6 months and has not only helped encourage that continuing work in me, but has set me free. Last week, we talked about God's glory as a gift, that before there was original sin, there was original glory, or some people are calling it original blessing. I love that. Religion has always been so focused on our sin and stopping our sin and trying to be strong-willed and being good for God, it has completely distorted the essence of the gospel. Yeah, God wants you free. God wants you liberated from how sin has twisted you and the lies we talked about last week, things we suppress. We know what's true. It's one of the things we're going to learn in this. We know what's true. I looked at someone recently who's having some real depression in their life, and they were trying to ask me to tell them what they should do. And we were sitting down on a couch in Oklahoma. And he said, "What do you think I should do?" And what popped into my head immediately is I said, "I think you already know what to do." He looked at me. I said, "But you don't want to do it. You want me to tell you something different to do. I think you already know." And he lifted up his head and he looked at me and he said, "I do know." I said, "Yeah, but you don't want to, right? It's hard. It's challenging." He said, "Yeah, it's all that." I said, "That's the path right there. That's the path. You already know. Most of the truth you're seeking out there somewhere, you already know in your heart. God's revealed it to you. I think that's why He loves me, or So You Don't Want to Go to Church Anymore, people write me and say, "Oh my gosh, you didn't teach me things I didn't know. You put words to things that I somehow already knew in my heart." And that's why that process is there. You already know. God's glory was fit in you. And as Romans 1 says, we traded it away. We traded the incorruptible God for the corruption of creature thought. That I think I know best and I can justify, and we can. I mean, the human capacity we've talked about in the God Journey is a superpower. The human capacity to justify whatever I want so that I can feel okay about it. That's the argument you run in your head and you do it. You want something so bad and you know initially this probably isn't good for me, or you want to treat somebody in a certain way and you're just hurt and angry and you want to lash out and you know it's probably not the best way for you to go, but you can work it around why that person deserves it. I watched that happen with my co-pastor friend that we talked about years ago. I've talked to him enough since to know that somehow a lie got in his heart about me, that I was not good enough, I was not going to go far enough, and he knew what he was doing was wrong. But how you justify it inside your head is, but this is so important for God that I've got to do to him what I wouldn't do to another human being. And we do a lot of that. How do I recognize that? I've done my share of it. My goodness. It's so easy to justify what you want, to remove pain, to indulge, to and for most other people to do this, it would be wrong. But right now for me, and we make exceptions for ourselves all the time. That's suppressing the truth and unrighteousness. And yet the quest for glory still remains in my heart. That's what I'm going to talk about. The echoes of glory that we face every day, that hollow thing in our heart that seeks to fill our need for glory by false human things. And most of human life is caught up in this. We call it shame if you want to look at the negative side of it. It's that feeling embarrassed, feeling like I'm not enough, feeling like I'm not worthy, feeling like I'm guilty. And religion is a wonderful way of exacerbating all those feelings, thinking we can exacerbate those, and then people will try to live free of them because that's what people will do. And the fact is, when your shame is increased, your victimhood to shame is increased. Knowing your shame, feeling embarrassed, just causes you to grab for these suppressing the truth and unrighteousness moments. And you know what? What's saddest is religion is probably the greatest untruth we grab to solve our shame. I know the quest from glory from when I was a little kid. I remember wanting to be first in line to win a contest, to be first at this, first at that, first in studies, academics, classroom, first, wanting to be first, wanting to be good at sports. If I wasn't good at a sport, I moved on to a different sport. I didn't want to be a loser. I didn't want to have the embarrassment of not being just good at something, but the best at something. That's an echo of Eden right there. The quest for false glory, the human drive, and there's been books written on it, man's, the purpose of man's meaning and purpose. I remember, you know, doing something great for God. The human drive for significance drove me for 42 years. I had an outsized ego. I've shared about in other ways, the desire to be famous, to be important in other people's eyes, to be an expert. All of that religion tries to exploit and use for ministry or use for good. All of that stuff is an echo of the glory we lost and trying to medicate it, trying to fulfill that hole in our heart with very human things. And they lead us astray. The drive for significance. Man's search for meaning, the desire to be famous. How many of you have sung in the shower before great crowds of people? Even those of us that can't sing have had that moment of, man, wanting to be on a stage, wanting to have the lights, wanting to have the crowd's approval, wanting to be famous. But most of us never get that whole definition of fame is 1/1,000,000% arrive at anything that smacks of fame. And even then, they find it fairly hollow by those I've talked to who get to that place. And yeah, the money's good, but the loss of privacy isn't. And then there's all other kinds of things that doesn't really fill the hole. You have to keep, because if you were famous here, then you've got to hold on to that fame. And oh my gosh. Even sports teams, guys, I got to tell you, I lived through my sports teams. And if my sports teams lost, man, I would go through days of just shame and humiliation. Why? Because I was vicariously putting my lust for glory in the hands of athletes who don't know me, don't care about me. And I think a lot that drives our sports stuff is that wanting to find some sense of glory. And if I can't find it in me, I'm going to find it in, I relate to the right sports team and we're winning the championships now, so we're something. And then they fall off of it. And I spent days, I know my family hated when my teams lost because they knew I would be depressed for a while. It was just hard. I put so much of my definition of myself or my humiliation from others. It was weird because when somebody else I knew, their team lost, I never shamed them. I never looked at them like, oh my gosh, you're a horrible person because your football team lost. But somehow I would feel that in myself. I look at it now and I've watched God walk me out of all of that over the last 25 years. I still enjoy sports, but I don't attach my worth to or my personal happiness to whether my team wins or loses anymore. And I've seen God walk me out of that, and it has, because living loved has resolved my need to have a false glory compensate for the false shame that was in my life. So we know shame well. It's that feeling of being insignificant, of not enough, of despised, of held in contempt by other people. I've got people in my life who still love to control me. Or let me say it this way. They love to try to control me by showing contempt for me. And whether it's an email or a personal conversation or someone giving you the cold shoulder, their contempt is a manipulative tool to get me to give them whatever they want. And that used to work for them. I used to work for me. I used to do it to other people. But in this journey of being transformed, of finding my worth in God's love and God's love alone, that I'm worth it to God, that God thinks I'm significant, not because of my fame in a worldly sense, not because of my attachment to a popular book or movie or whatever. It's not that. I think the things that makes God happiest is how I love Sarah, how I love my kids, how I serve people in the world. I was talking to someone last week who was trying to find their whole worth based on what other people thought of them. And they kept coming, they kept circling back around to it. I just feel worthless. And I said, well, why do you feel worthless? Well, so-and-so said this, and this didn't happen the way I thought it should. And I said, so that's how you're going to define. And that's part of that. What I want to see, what I hope you'll see, is that's part of that whole suppressing the truth and unrighteousness. I'm worthy because of the love of my Father. I don't have to live in shame anymore. I get to live in the freedom of knowing who God is. And when I get to live loved in Him, then I get to live free in Him. And that freedom is so wonderfully transformative in the way I get to live and work in the world. So if you can help recognize, and I think this is so important, recognize your drive for significance, your drive for fame, your the frustrations in your heart because you haven't been as successful as you want to be, or you didn't get the breaks that person got, and you want to be in that spot. Well, I had a friend to go to a Christian retreat kind of thing of some kind, never went on it. But one of the things he came back from, and I said, how was it? He said, oh my gosh, have you ever had a standing ovation? I'm going, what are you talking about? He said, I stood in a room full of people, and I was on the stage in the lights, and everybody stood and gave me a, I said, did everybody get a standing ovation? Yeah, it's part of it. Everybody get it. It was so healing to me. And I get what he thinks is true, but I wonder if, because I know for me at that time in my life, that would have filled a spot with something false that didn't need filling. Yeah, I know. I've had standing ovations from people. I know how addicting those can be if they fill a broken place in your heart. I remember the first moments of acclaim I got was for getting that 2 year of consecutive Sunday school attendance pen when I was 12 or 13 years old. And I'm getting this applause, and it makes me actually, I could say this going back to the moment, made me feel superior to everyone in the room because no one in the history of that church had ever gotten a 2 year pen before. I wish I had known then how badly that was wiring me. The quest for glory, whether it's in a sports team, whether it's competing at work, whether it's competing with your friends to be better known, whether it manifests itself in gossip because I got to tear them down to make me look better, whether it's all part of that suppressing the truth thing we talked about last week of having to justify myself so that I look better. All of those things, shame, humiliation, pride, arrogance, all of that are the echoes of Eden. There are attempts to fill a genuine reality with a false reality. And it'll be wonderful for a moment. But what I found in those things, when I could do something like be first in my class, like do well at a sport and get an all-star trophy in college and most outstanding official and some of the things that I was rewarded with in college. And you do. I mean, the momentary hit is, this is fabulous. And then you've got to get right back to it because you've got to keep winning. I remember back in the 70s, one of the guys at the world's largest church out of Korea, and heard him talk. And it was never like I thought it would be. Oh, you got the biggest church in the world. You're the most important pastor in the world. No, he's got to hold on to those people and keep growing that people because everybody's coming at him. When you seek to find your identity in the false glory, and our world provides plenty of it because that's what motivates people who are broken. And we're broken. And so when Jesus comes to liberate us, Jesus comes to win us into his love, I want you to know who my Father is. I want you to know that you are deeply loved by this Father, even in your brokenness. He's not defining you by your worst moments. He knows who he created you to be. He wants to liberate you into that joy and glory. And here's what we're going to find out. And this is what's really transforming to me. As long as we're people who seek false glory, as long as we live in the suppressing the truth, suppressing what's true to believe what I need to believe to cope with life the way I need to cope with life, then Romans 1 started. The glory of God is evident in the creation. It's plain. Jesus talks about it. We're going to go to some scriptures next time where Jesus talks about how plain God's reality is in the world. And yet my emails are full of people who just say, you know, God's never spoken to me. I've never seen God's hand in anything. And it doesn't convince me. I know it convinces them. Well, God's silent or God doesn't care. Or I'm one of those that are so bad. God's not going to make himself known. What Jesus kept saying is this. This is what we're going to explore over these sessions together. The glory of God is evident in the world. It is all around you. And if you're not seeing it, it's not because it isn't there. It's because you got lost in something that makes you broken. You've suppressed the truth and unrighteousness. You have sought glory and other things, and maybe you've achieved it, and maybe you haven't. And the frustration of not achieving it is even more, maybe, perhaps more blinding than the frustration of having achieved it and finding it more empty than you thought it would be. And now God says, I'm going to give you this glory back, not for me, so that your joy will be full. God's concern is for the creation. It's not for himself. It's for you. He loves you. He knows you got lost. Welcome to the club. I was 42 years lost in these pursuits I've just described to you. And then through a painful thing and how God pokes a hole in our illusions, and then if we're willing to walk with him outside that illusion, that's where God's light and life become plain again. And so if you're stuck in one of those, I don't see it, I don't get it, I understand. Abuse does that. Suppressing the truth and unrighteousness does that. We get lost doing that. I get it. But God's opening the door to you again. God wants you, because the gift now is, hey, it didn't happen through human performance in the garden. We couldn't do the one thing God asked us not to do. But that invited a whole host of other problems where now we keep embracing what's untrue, because we so want what we want. And it can be as indulgent as just, I'm going to get that because I want to get it. Or it could be the coping mechanism of, I'm trying to avoid the pain that I think will destroy me. God understands why we've retreated into those things. And God wants to invite us out. Come on. I want you to know me. I'm not hiding from you. It's plain. You're not saying it? That has more to do with what's going on inside of you than it does that I don't like you. So don't go there. Hold these things before God. This week, look for ways that shame impacts you, the lust for glory impacts you, the wanting to be someone, feeling horrible because you're not someone, you're not famous, you haven't. Look at all that in your heart. And when you see moments of it, just give it back to God. God, I don't want this to control me anymore. Father, would you transform me? Father, show me your love. Just what is it about your love I don't know that if I knew it, I wouldn't be seeking glory in that. I wouldn't be so disappointed that that thing that I thought would define my whole life didn't happen the way it should have or so many things, pain, disappointed prayers, divorce, so many things try and define us as unworthy of God's love. Jesus says this, we're going to look at it more next week. I think it's John 8. A loveless world is a sightless world. Hear that. God's reality is evident, but a loveless world, when I'm not loved, I can't see. When I'm not living in that love, I can't see. And when I can't see, then I've got to grab my own illusions to hold my life together. Embracing God's glory is about giving up your illusions. It's a process, can be painful at times, but then, wow, to see his glory, to let his joy be in me and my joy full, regardless of what's going on circumstantially, that's the process of embracing his glory. Keep coming. We're going to learn how that happens, and it is so worth it.